Welcome to the Pathways podcast from the American Society for Cell Biology. My name is Mary Spiro, and I am your host. Today, we'll be talking about preprints and the new preprint highlights from our own journal, Molecular Biology of the Cell. My guests are ASCB's curation manager, Mike Lacey, and two of our early career editors with MBOC, Karen Lasker of Scripps Research and Christina Aguilera from UCLA. Thank you for sharing your time with me today.
Great. We're happy to be here.
Okay, Mike, let's start with you. Can you briefly describe your role at MBOC and with ASCB? What is a curation manager?
Yeah, so thanks again for having us. So the curation manager is a pretty unique role. I had my own path in research. I did my PhD in biochemistry and biophysics, but then went on to work in publishing and editing for a while. So this curation manager is a kind of a special role working with ASCB's journal, Molecular Biology of the Cell, to oversee this new project. And the goal is to provide what we're calling curation tools for our journal editors to be able to highlight and provide structured recognition of interesting research works to better indicate significance to readers. And so my role is to manage the design, the technical implementation, oversee the process of getting these things published online in the journal. So I've actually been working with ASCB for about a year and a half, doing a lot of this kind of behind the scenes and technical work. And just now in the past few weeks, in March, we got to publish our first preprint highlights.
I have a lot of questions about what you've been up to with MBOC. But I did want to ask before we get further into the weeds, are there other curation managers at journals? Because this is the first time I've ever heard of this position or even this sort of evaluation of papers.
Yeah, so it's a fairly unique project that MBOC is doing, but there are other kinds of projects that are kind of similar in goal and structure. There's a few journals or publishing groups that have other kinds of curation or highlighting or public review of preprints. So the idea is to bring, you know, part of the useful thing about what journals do is provide some editorial selection or guidance to collect papers of a certain topic or promote things to their readership. So preprints kind of exist outside of that process, but people still like to have some guide or some way to contribute and highlight things for their field. A couple of things that I can mention that are related or came a little bit earlier than our curation project are Prelights by the Company of Biologists. They publish journals like the Development and the Journal of Cell Science, and their Prelights are a nice platform to highlight interesting preprints. Some journals like eLife are even going further and taking their whole peer review process of manuscripts that they would like to publish in the journal, but basically conducting that on preprints themselves. So authors will post a preprint first, then send it to eLife, and the journal will post the reviews kind of throughout the process. So a lot of folks are very interested in this aspect of more open commenting and curation of preprints for the research community.
Absolutely, Mike. Thank you for introducing the concept of the preprint highlights. But what is also extremely unique about the MBOC preprint highlights is how succinct ours are. So what we're doing is we're actually digesting entire pieces of work into really five sentences. And what that is doing is really showcasing the importance and the innovation of a piece of work in a very small paragraph. And that is different than the example that Mike just brought up about the prelights. And the prelights are actually really expansive, and they actually also include some level of revision by the curator. And so ours is just a very unique and much more simple way to do preprint highlights.
Well, for somebody like me who likes to just scan journals looking for interesting things to write about, that's a great, I'm going to be looking at many more of your preprint highlights. Before we get too far along, I want to make sure that people understand who they're listening to. We have two early career editors here with us today. So can you each introduce yourselves and tell a little bit about where you're working and what your research is about?
Yeah, of course. Hi, Mary. Thank you again for having me. So I'm Christine Aguilera. I obtained my PhD from UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas in cancer biology. And I'm currently an assistant project scientist and former postdoc at UCLA. I've worked primarily in cancer biology, focusing on the preclinical identification of effective treatment strategies in various types of cancer. And I'm really excited to be joining you all today.
My name is Karen Lasker. I'm an assistant professor at Scripps Research, and our lab studies membranous organelle in bacteria. And we're also using these findings to engineer synthetic membranous organelle in higher order organisms. So it's a very interdisciplinary lab that combines biophysics, microbiology, cell biology, and computational biology all together.
Tell me a little bit about the editorial board structure at MBOC, because there does seem to be a bit of a hierarchy, and then we'll get a little bit more into the early career editor's role, but I want to just give me an overview of that.
Sure. So first of all, I'll point out that all of MBOC's editors are active researchers. They're faculty and scientists who volunteer their time to contribute to the journal, handling editorial decisions of what to review, what to publish, and driving kind of larger decisions about the journal's direction. So we have an editor in chief, Matt Welch, who I think you had on a previous podcast earlier last year, a small group of senior editors who have additional advisory roles, and then a large group of associate editors who do most of the handling of papers and their various expertise. So they're typically inviting reviewers, they're making decisions and communicating with authors what kind of revisions they can make and when they're ready to accept a paper. And the newest addition to the board are our early career editors who we've added last year. These are postdocs and early stage professors mainly focused on these preprint highlights among some other activities and opportunities.
So Christina and Karen, you are both early career editors. Tell me a little bit about what are preprints and exactly how they differ from peer review publications. I know we touched on that a little bit at the beginning, but I want to get more into that because I know that there has been a little bit of pushback about having preprints out there and maybe like they've been giving away their secrets or something before they publish their paper. So tell me a little bit about the difference between fully peer-reviewed paper, published paper, and a preprint.
Preprint is really a full, the time where the authors believe they have a complete body of work that is worth sharing with the community. So most people, when they publish their preprint, this is really, they think the project is complete and ready to be shared. And actually at that time, now with social media and the exposure that you get through preprints, the acceleration of the scientific process is astonishing, because really at that time you get people contacting you about the paper with ideas, comments, and even collaborations. At the same time, usually people submit that manuscript for peer review in a journal. And at that time, you're going to get very important feedback on perhaps missing controls or need to shift the focus of the paper a little bit more. But sort of the innovative piece of the paper, or sort of the key experiment, which is what the center of the paper is all about, is found in the preprint. And everything else is, of course, getting it ready for, you know, prime time and being there for history forever. But I mean, for the scientific process, it's usually there's a couple of key ideas and a key experiment that is already there. So that's been extremely helpful. And I can tell you, when I was a postdoc, a lot of the collaborations that I got and exposure was actually through preprint publication. So I'm a big believer in this process.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that a big thing that a lot of researchers like about preprints is that they get to share their results earlier. The peer review process and getting a paper published in a journal is an important kind of landmark or milestone for a project, but that takes a lot of time. It's often a year or more between the time when somebody sends their paper to a journal and it actually gets published. And so all that time, any review comments back and forth, work that's being done to improve the paper, rather than having that all be kind of a confidential closed process, preprints allow the authors to share those results more quickly, share updates, let people comment openly, and get this work done out in the open. And so kind of decoupling the process of the communication and feedback from the journal publishing system, it gives a lot of people more opportunities than they might otherwise have to be seen and to engage with the work in its evolving form.
Karen, why did you decide to become an early career editor or join that force?
Yeah, so this program, when it was advertised, really combines two important communication challenges that have been extremely beneficial to our scientific community and to my own development as a scientist. So first, Molecular Biology of the Cell publishes high quality and impactful papers across diverse topics in cell biology. And the journal is really doing a good job covering emerging trends in a rigorous way, which I benefited greatly from. And second, preprints facilitate this rapid communication of novel ideas, which accelerate the scientific process. So I was so excited to learn that Molecular Biology of the Cell is planning to merge these things and highlight preprint in such a meaningful way. So I was very eager to get involved in the process.
Christina, how about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is a really excellent opportunity. And through my involvement with MBOC as an early career editor, it's really impacted my postdoctoral training as well as my experience as an assistant project scientist. And it has certainly enhanced my science communication skills, which I think is really critical when pursuing a career that involves scientific writing and the dissemination of scientific progress. And what I think is really interesting, what's been really fun, is that we have worked at very clearly and succinctly describing the context of scientific work and its importance in roughly 5 sentences. And not only that, but this has been a great opportunity and extremely motivating to actually read scientific work beyond my specific projects or my specific interests. And it's been really fun to find and highlight cutting edge work and interesting papers with the goal of enhancing an article's audience as well as the contribution to a field. I highly recommend this opportunity to our listeners.
So I have to say, I think the preprints, I'm going to call them hieroglyphics, the badges, they are so cool and descriptive. Can you tell me a little bit how this system was developed and designed? You have 10 different badges. How did you come up with those different categories? I'm really fascinated, especially maybe papers that are rarely binned into one badge or another. I'm very curious about that as well.
Yeah, so the badges, we wanted them to be a quick visual way to indicate what we think are useful aspects of the research work, especially things that, you know, might not be obvious upon an initial read, but are things that many people want to be recognized and want to be able to recognize in a paper. So these are the things that we chose to highlight with the badges are things like whether a paper shares open data sets or posts the software that the researchers developed, whether they're developing and sharing new methods or new materials that other researchers can use, even things like if they're challenging the results of previous work or providing an instructional resource. You know, these are things that I think a lot of researchers in the field would find valuable and would want to know that, oh, hey, this is a paper that I should read because it has this, this, and this in it. But especially for a non-expert or somebody who might not be planning to read the whole paper, they still might want to be able to recognize that, you know, whether it's their colleagues or somebody on a that they're reviewing a grant or award for, to be able to have things like this recognized and be highlighted in a structured way. And so the badges alongside the significance statements, as Christina mentioned, these, you know, relatively short written statements that really highlight what's important about the paper itself, and to have this written in a way that is accessible to a much broader audience. So they serve kind of both purposes of getting researchers interested to read the preprint further, getting a quicker kind of catch for them to say, oh yeah, actually I do want to read about that. What was this new method? Or, you know, somebody who may not have been planning to read it, but would still like to get some more context or more understanding about the paper. So these were developed in a combination of background research and looking at other kinds of initiatives that are highlighting ways to convey research significance and highlight research practices, and a lot of discussions. We had a great group of kind of informal advisors from across kind of the science communication and publishing and assessment fields. We had input from folks at DORA, the Declaration on Research Assessment, some folks from PLOS, and our importantly also our funders. This curation project is funded and supported by a grant from the HHMI and the Wellcome Trust. So we've had a lot of great connections to folks who are interested in driving these kinds of efforts for the research community.
So as I'm looking at some of the preprint highlights, you know, some of the papers have only two badges, and to go with their significance statement, some have four. Do you have a limit on the number of badges a paper can have? And also, I would be really interested to see down the road what your most popular badge is, like where the distribution of badges is falling in the journal.
Yeah, that's a great point. So we don't have a strict limit on these kinds of things. You know, we have formalized definitions that our readers, authors, and listeners can go and look up for more information. But really, we do think that we tried to pose a lot of options for our editors, and we want to see what kinds of research aspects people are interested in. It might turn out that you know, a couple of these badges might just not get used very much, and you know, maybe that's okay. But we might find that certain ones keep getting used over and over, and maybe those are the kinds of papers that people are really, really curious to highlight and really interested to read more of. You know, it would be unusual for a single paper to get, you know, all 10 badges. But, you know, that would be probably a really interesting paper. And it would be nice to have somebody recognize those things and not have to look at it blindly yourself and wonder if I missed something. You know, having a trusted expert who can provide some more signals is always helpful.
Well, maybe that can be a new honorific award at ASCB, that the paper with the most badges. Karen, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I think another thing that I actually really like about the badge system is that it allows us to look at papers not necessarily from a standpoint of a scientific domain like cell trafficking or development, but rather from the lens of the scientific process, like a new method or new hypothesis. And I actually feel like this different characterization of manuscript can help, for example, students and postdocs to find additional significance in their projects and their scientific journey. And it really allows to increase diversity of scientific publications, because we can't just look for, you know, the new hypothesis. Actually, there's new method development, finding something wrong and other things. So I think it really sort of celebrates all type of scientific projects and approaches.
Absolutely, Karen. I absolutely agree. And like we were saying a little bit before, what it ultimately is just a different way to engage with the literature. And I think that it's just really important to engage different populations within the scientific community. And what we're really striving to do is also on the social media platform is posting these preprints. And as Mike said, if one looks at the preprint, looks at all these badges and says, hey, this one looks really interesting. So what we're really trying to do is engage the scientific community. And I think that that's really important work.
How has your experience in evaluating these papers for preprint highlights impacted your own research and your own writing of papers even?
So it actually had a really good, I think, positive influence, because evaluating those preprints for molecular biology of the cell really forced me to think like an editor. And I now understand even more the importance of communicating ideas and result in a clear and concise manner. And I think actually one of the things that really reinforced that is this significant statement that we were talking about before, because we need to summarize a full body of work in those 3 to 5 sentences, which is challenging. And actually, once we rewrite that, we have a back and forth with Mike on like the exact wording and sort of what to really highlight, which again reinforced this idea of what is the key message of the paper. So now when I'm thinking about projects and papers that I'm writing myself, I'm trying to think of like this poor editor that needs to figure out what am I actually trying to say. So it really helps me and motivates me to write better papers.
I totally agree with Karen. It has certainly impacted in this entire exercise. It has been, like we said a couple times now, in the art of being very succinct and just get to the point, try to say what you're trying to say with your data, but also in the analysis of previous work for your introduction or for your discussion. If your data contradicts something and you want to discuss that in the discussion, how best to digest another piece of work and how best to describe that in your discussion. And of course, every journal has a word limit, you know, word count limit and things like that. So it's been a great experience to just be very to the point, just digest a piece of work and explain it succinctly. So that's how it's impacted mine.
I'm giving you all honorary science journalism degrees based on this experience. It's something that I've had to do my entire career. And I find it interesting that you are finding this challenging. I think one of the interesting things about, you know, what you're doing in having to boil it down is you have to find what is this? Why do we care about this research? What is the point? You know, what's the lead sentence here? What's the who, what, where, when, and why? I always read papers backwards. I read the results first, and then I go back and I read the discussion the abstract and work my way through it that way. Have you found that this is something that you do as well?
Definitely not reading the paper linearly. It's sort of finding a hook, and the hook might be in different parts of the paper, and it might motivate you to read further and further along. But definitely not linearly. And I wish there was a way to sort of keep the audience engaged from beginning to end when they read the paper. But I think that's part of the process, because, you know, people think in different ways. So people are going to be motivated by different parts of the paper.
Okay, so what are some of the challenges that you've encountered? I know you've mentioned having a hard time sort of drilling down to the essentials of the paper, but what are some of the challenges that you've encountered? Mike, you can also talk about just launching the program itself that you've encountered in doing the preprint highlights.
Yeah, so I can definitely say a lot of especially early in developing and implementing the project. A lot of the challenges were logistical. You know, we wanted a few important things about the project. We wanted the preprint highlights to be part of MBOC's journal content. You know, these aren't not just kind of a standalone object that we just publish on the website. We wanted to build these into the way that we publish research articles and have a very formalized, structured, robust system for hosting these things. But one of the problems to doing that is that all of our journal workflows and website systems are really custom built for a very specific format of article, you know, a journal article that has an abstract and introduction and results and figures and references and no other unusual things, because everybody has the same expectation of what it should look like. So in order just to be able to publish a new kind of content that has a much different structure and format, even something that's, you know, very short, but something that has a very different kind of format, we had to implement a lot of the functions in a new way. So that took a lot of time working, going back and forth with our web system, our publishing vendors. And ASCB is a nonprofit organization. We don't necessarily have the deep financial and in-house technical resources that a big corporate publisher has. So we rely on outside vendors to do a lot of these things. And we are very fortunate that the project is supported by a grant from the Wellcome Trust and HHMI. And so that funded a lot of these implementation steps. And so now going forward, once we have, now that we have these systems coded and in place and live functional web systems, most of the work going forward is much more conventional, kind of our editors write things up, send them in, and we can post them and publish them in a format going forward. And then the challenges are looking ahead to how our editors do these things, how people want to write and read these things. And that's definitely, you know, the next phase that we're looking ahead to.
And certainly amongst those challenges you just mentioned, Mike, might be how these preprints are received by the scientific community. And I'm also interested to know how the metrics will look if our preprint highlights are impacting the readership of those preprints. And our preprints themselves, what is the traffic going to look like on the MBOC website? How is the traffic going to look on the social media platform? So I'm also really interested to know, maybe a year from now, once we really get it up and running and maybe recruit more early career editors over time. And I'm really interested to know how we're going to be impacting the field.
Definitely. Yeah, that's an important aspect too. And we've tried to talk about this internally and externally with getting advice from folks about what they want a project like this to look like. You know, as a journal and as a scientific society, we can leverage our resources and our members' expertise. But ultimately, the function of this project, among the other things that the society does, is that it needs to be responsive to what the community wants and needs. And so we're definitely open to feedback, looking to evolve as we need to. And make sure that we're doing things in a way that the people want to see.
I can mention two challenges, additional challenges. I think one is common to any editor, and the one is, I think, a little bit more special to us as selecting for preprints. So one challenge is, of course, selecting a preprint from a large pool of really excited projects. And I think that because submitting preprints has become such a common practice, and this is great, but it also adds this, you know, good problem of too many exciting preprints to choose from. So that's, you know, really teaches us, I think, this how to be an editor and select the preprint we want to highlight. Another challenge that I think is unique to us as selecting preprints is the fact that it is a preprint. So in that sense, I mean, we'll have to balance completion of work versus the innovation, the innovative piece. So should we go for preprints that are, you know, basically can tomorrow go on a journal, or something that still needs a little bit more work, but it's so exciting. So how should we balance these two?
I noticed that on the preprint, on those pages with the preprints, there's no way to comment. And I'm just wondering if you ever get feedback from people who say, oh, I don't think that badge is appropriate, or I think it should also include these other badges. If you ever get well, maybe it's too early in the process, but I'm curious if you will ever get feedback like that from people who read these highlights.
Yeah. So just to clarify, you're talking about the preprint highlight in MBOC. Yes. Yeah. Because the preprints themselves, we're usually linking to preprints on BioArchive, the preprint server, and those have good ways for readers and authors and anybody to comment there. But yeah, in MBOC, these are essentially posed as a small editorial piece. So, you know, they're written and prepared and agreed upon by the editors and then published in the journal. We are happy to have feedback from authors. If you click through any of the badges or the curation tools kind of description site, there is a link down at the bottom to send me an email. And we've gotten some good feedback from folks already, I think, with the general announcements and people seeing the first ones being published. A number of people have written either if they know an editor or just sent something to the journal to say, hey, this is a really exciting project. We're happy to see it. We'll be very curious to watch how it develops.
I'm really, really interested to see what kinds of papers come out of this. So you've got 10 badges. What are some of your favorite badges to find in a paper? What's interesting to you? And maybe what is something that you are always surprised that you're going to see?
Well, I always enjoy reading a piece of work that extends our current knowledge, and that would, of course, be the new hypothesis badge. But I'm also really motivated to read work that has been tested or validated robustly, and that would be the cross-validation badge. But ultimately, that really depends on the reader and the editor and what types of work that they like to read. But those are the two that I really find important.
Yeah, and I'll add just for listeners, we do also want to point out that the absence of any particular badge is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, like Christina mentioned, that this cross-validation badge is really an indication that the authors have used several different kinds of methods or very orthogonal approaches. You know, there's certainly very good work that can be done with very straightforward, very clear, well-established techniques. And so, you know, the fact that something doesn't use a new method or doesn't, you know, throw out tons of different ways of testing the same thing isn't necessarily a bad thing. But exactly when those things do come up, you really like to be able to recognize it for the authors themselves, for readers who may be looking to learn more.
Karen, did you have something to add?
Actually, I wanted to say the hypothesis too, so maybe it's redundant. I mean, I can give my answer, but I feel like it's redundant. I mean, I can give my answer. You can edit it out later. Okay. Yeah, so the most interesting badge for me is new hypothesis, because it allows us to go into this like detective story of how hypothesis came about and how it was proven. And yeah, and actually an additional badge that goes on the proving side can be a new method. Maybe they had to develop a new method for that, or new databases and so on. It's also exciting, always exciting. But yeah, the driver of new hypothesis to me is the most exciting one.
I'm disappointed no one chose, false negative results.
Yeah, the null hypothesis.
We can say that. We can say that if that would be good.
No, I just love that one. It's like we have bad results, but they're meaningful.
Actually, you know, maybe we should highlight the fact that there is. I mean, that this thing is something that should be published. Maybe we should give a sentence of that because it is important sometimes. You know, null results. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the goal with having that badge is to highlight, you know, a lot of times journals are and researchers feel very pressured to only publish strong positive outcomes. And, you know, if some researchers tried to test a very popular hypothesis and really just couldn't find any support for it, and we don't know really what else is going on here, but we can really say pretty conclusively that there wasn't an outcome for you know, this experiment, that's, you know, that's still something that readers ought to be able to find and that researchers should be recognized for.
It's super important to find out if you can't reproduce the results, that's an indication something else might be going on. Okay, so what do you hope people gain by looking at the preprint highlights, by reading the summary statements, and, you know, sifting through all these badges? What do you hope people will gain from this?
Yeah, so as we've mentioned before, but just kind of to sum up, we hope to, on the one hand, boost the audience for particular papers, help researchers be recognized for valuable aspects of the research, and to have a new way to contribute to the preprint kind of ecosystem. You know, it's definitely, it's an evolving area. A lot of people want to contribute and be recognized for things. And we want to give a platform for researchers like our early career editors to be able to contribute their expertise, gain some skills, and gain exposure for themselves and for you know, the kinds of research that they want to see in their field.
Yeah, I think that looking and opening bioarchive can be a little bit overwhelming because there are a lot of new preprints published every day. So we hope that this is going to be one of the go-to tools for looking at exciting papers, potentially outside of your immediate field, but things that you still care about. And that can help, you know, some level of curation. And that can, again, accelerate the scientific process by, you know, looking at this routinely every 2 weeks. So like, yeah, what are the new cool highlights, the new cool papers that are bioarchived these last few months?
And it should be really easy to do that because all they have to do is read 5 sentences. So rather than opening up PubMed or bioarchive and being inundated by so much new cool science out there, all one has to do is go to the MBOC website, to the preprint highlights tab, check out these 5-sentence preprint highlights, look at the badges, see if you're interested in any of the preprints themselves, and then check out the preprints. So hopefully what this will do is engage the audience in a different way, in a very unique way, and make an impact on the field by promoting the dissemination of these preprints.
Well, it certainly sounds like MBOC's early career editors have their fingers on the pulse of cell biology research. You are at the leading edge. Is there anything else that you would like me to know, for us to know, our listeners to know about preprint highlights, about MBOC itself, or anything else related?
Yeah, so I'll add that, you know, we mentioned this a little bit before, but really this whole curation project is a work in progress, and it is an experiment. And so we'll be tracking the outcomes of the preprint highlights that we post. We'll be looking to see how the presence of these badges might affect whether people are reading the preprint or eventually regular articles that get badged and highlighted in this way. And so we'll definitely be open and transparent too about that process of what we find, what we might decide to change over time as we look to expand or adapt the system. And maybe even we can inspire other journals to do similar kinds of things.
I want to add another point is that I just want to thank Microbiology of the Cell that to decided to include postdocs and young assistant professors to be part of this process. I don't think it's that trivial, and I think it shows a lot about the efforts for inclusivity and diversity for ASCB as a whole. And also the fact that we are, as junior editors or young editors, getting mentorship from established editors within molecular biology of the cell. So it was really thought through, and it's really nurturing not just those preprints, but also the community of young cell biologists. So thank you for that.
Well, Mike, Christina, Karen, thank you so much for sharing your time with me today and telling me all about preprint highlights.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you, Mary. It was a pleasure.
The Pathways Podcast is a production of the American Society for Cell Biology. Thanks for listening.